First off, I think there's some confusion because the title of the on the program, it said personal productivity. And when you come in, it says work harder, work smarter, not harder. This is the same session. So just to clear up that confusion. But I just want to say good morning and welcome everyone in to the session this morning. I'm Pamela McKay, and I'm the president for iHeartMedia here in Austin. And so if you're a country music fan, you're familiar with our stations KACE or KVET. If you are a CHR fan, you may be familiar with KISS or The Beat. Or if you're a sports fan, familiar with The Zone. So those are the properties that we have here in Austin. So I'll be the host for the session, and I just wanted you to know that as one of the world's leading media companies, we're here to support the advancement of women leaders across the state and support this community. Through charitable giving, employee volunteer programs, and much more, we support women in their daily lives and learning. iHeartMedia is proud to be a partner for the Texas Conference for Women. Our combined mission is to increase the representation of women in leadership by empowering them to make their mark for their companies, their careers, and their communities. This conference today is just one of the many exceptional programs that we offer throughout the year to help women leaders excel, connect, and develop. We encourage you to visit our booth in the exhibit hall to learn more. And now, I am thrilled that you are here to participate in embracing the power of your personal productivity, or work smarter, not harder. We have an amazing session in store for you. What I love most about this topic is the first three words of the title, embracing the power. I think that's a very, very strong statement. And I believe that if we as women would do that, we would achieve so much more of what we want to achieve on a personal and professional level. So if we would just think about those three words. excuse me. Now I'm very excited to introduce you to our speaker for today. Carson Tate says our brains often don't work the way the experts assume. In this session, you will discover your individual productivity style through exploration of the four major styles: prioritizer, a planner, an arranger, or a visualizer. She will offer invaluable tactics for leveraging your personal style instead of fighting it. This approach makes it much easier to manage your attention span, get more done, tame your inbox. How many people struggle with that, right? Tame your inbox, set and reach goals, and much, much more. She will also share how understanding the different styles can improve workplace relationships with bosses, colleagues, and employees, another big challenge for us every day. So without further ado, please put your hands together for Ms. Carson Tate.
Thanks, Pam. Thank you. Well, good morning. I'm really glad to be in Texas. So thank you. Yay. Thank you for having me. So it was 2000. Let's see what's going on with my clicker. Hold on. It's not happy with me. There we go. So it was 2000, and I was selling drugs, legal drugs. They're not quite as profitable as the other ones, but at least I wasn't going to jail. And we had gone to Las Vegas for our national, getting a little feedback, yeah, our national sales convention. And it was day four of a five-day conference, and I was getting tired of sitting in chairs just like the ones you're sitting in. So I decide that afternoon to go down to the gym in the hotel. So I go in, and this is when they've set up the cardio theater concept, you know, where they line up all the torture devices in a row. So they had the treadmills and the stair climbers. And in this gym, they had a row of mirrors in front of the treadmills. Now that's evil, because you don't need the mirror right there. So I get on my treadmill and I start jogging along, and I notice suspended from the ceiling are 10 TVs, and they're all on different channels. Plug in my headphones and start watching 10 different channels. And before you know it, I stumble and I go flying off the back of the treadmill. I completely bust it. And to make matters worse, the senior vice president of sales, my big, big boss, George, he was two treadmills to the right. As I'm flying off the back, he turns, looks at me, and he doesn't say anything. He just watches me fall. I mean, I was mortified. I mean, as an adult who falls off of a treadmill. But I don't think you care about my ability to stay upright on a treadmill, but I do think that the treadmill is a really good analogy. Because how often in life have you felt like you are running as hard and as fast as you possibly can? And at any moment, you too might go flying off the back of this treadmill called life. But who controls the speed on the treadmill? You do. And who controls the incline on the treadmill? You do. So if we want to embrace the power of our own personal productivity style and start working smarter, not harder, the first step is I'm inviting you to step into that place of choice where you can choose to do something differently. So if something isn't working for you today, let's step in and choose to do something differently. Now, that's hard because as a culture, American culture, we really like to be busy. In fact, I think there are busyness merit badges that are given out. Oh, I'm so busy. I have all these emails, all these meetings, all this work. I have so much to do. I'm needed, valued, and important, right? And what would happen if you said to a colleague when they ask you how you're doing, I'm just so busy? What if you didn't answer that way? Would they think something's wrong with you? We're really busy, so stepping into a place of choice is hard. Look at some of these statistics. So 40% of Americans report feeling completely overworked. And as many of you know, Americans work more hours than any other industrialized country in the world. Moms who work, many of you in this room, report that they get less than 6 hours of sleep. Right? We're a little sleep deprived. Thank goodness for Starbucks. A third of American workers work more than 50 hours per week. Dual income couples say they have 12 minutes to talk to each other. That's not even a full sitcom. And my favorite, it's my favorite one, 50%. Okay, 50% of workers admit to checking email in the bathroom. I mean, so now we know why hand sanitizer is everywhere, thank goodness. But what's going on? We're busy. And so what happens is we feel this restriction around our time. We've only got 168 hours a week, and it doesn't feel like enough. And the truth is, we're not going to get any less busy. The demands on us at work are only going to increase. The demands on us personally are only going to increase. So we tell ourselves, okay, I can multitask better. I'm going to walk the dog, take the conference call, and pick up the cleaning all at the same time. But something's got to give. Because the way we're working isn't working. It's burning us out. And so the first step, I think, is to examine one of my favorite emotions that hijacks me all the time. We're talking about guilt. You ever felt any guilt? I was feeling really guilty because my daughter, EC, woke up and she was a soaking wet mess. Of course, this was a work day. I'm really excited. She's a mess. I'm frazzled. I'm feeling incredibly guilty because she's been very uncomfortable. Because the day before, I had been a frantic mad woman rushing through Target, went to the pull-up aisle, grabbed some pull-ups, threw them in my cart, and checked out as fast as I could. Oops. I bought pull-ups for boys. She's a girl. Didn't quite work for me. But see, that's just the minor leagues when it comes to my guilt. I can lay it on so thick that it becomes a really deep, dark abyss. Am I spending too much time on the road working and not enough time with my family? Is it a problem that the majority of our meals last week came up from little small takeout boxes? I said no to that ask to serve on the community board. I'm feeling guilty for not serving. And then it just spirals down and down. But see, guilt hijacks us. And guilt has a very close cousin. And its close cousin is the shoulds. And what happens is we start shoulding all over ourselves. Right? I should do this. I should make cupcakes from scratch. I should take the stretch assignment. I should say yes. And before you know it, our time isn't ours. We're completely hijacked. So if you found yourself hooked in this spiral of guilt and the shoulds, the first step of embracing your power and stepping into that place of choice is we got to start saying no. And no is a complete sentence. It's a hard complete sentence, but it actually is a complete sentence. And so I'm going to suggest that we reframe no and use something I call the power no. And so the power no is what's going to free us from the clutches of guilt and the shoulds. And it starts with the P. And the P stands for priorities. Oops, there we go. So when you feel yourself in that moment, someone has just asked you to serve on yet another board, I want you to ask yourself, whose priorities are these? Are these my priorities? Is the ask in alignment with my goals, my objectives, and what is really fundamentally, intrinsically important to me? First step. Then I'm going to challenge you to look at the opportunities, because what's interesting about the shoulds is sometimes they show up and present an opportunity. So is there an opportunity here? So this is when your manager comes to you and says, I've got a stretch assignment for you. Is there an opportunity there to advance your career? You are going to be uncomfortable in the moment, but is there an opportunity? We want to explore it. Then I want you to ask yourself, who is making the ask? Is it your manager? Is it a senior leader in the organization? Is it your best friend? Is it your mother, significant other, your dog? Who's making the ask? Because that matters in terms of our relationships. Then let's look at the expectations. What are the expectations that are embedded in that should? So this is where we start to get hooked with these cultural expectations. What are the scripts or the stories we're telling ourselves? So is it a cultural expectation that you make cupcakes from scratch and say yes to every community engagement and shave your legs every day? Is it a family expectation? Is it a personal values expectation? We want to filter that ask through this lens of expectations. And then lastly, let's get real. What is the worst thing that would happen if you said no? And I want you to go really grandiose here. What's the worst thing that would happen? So, for example, if you say no to the stretch assignment because it's not right now in your life, what's the worst thing that can happen? You can get fired? Probably not. Are they going to think less of you? Probably not. So we want to really align with the reality of the ask and the reality of us saying no and ground it. So when Steve Jobs returned to Apple in 1997, he reduced their product portfolio from 300 devices to 10. And the reason that he did that is to help them focus. One thing around the shoulds that's a problem is it stretches our focus. You can't focus on that much. Because every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. And so I want to make sure you're saying yes to the things that align with who you are and how you choose to show up in the world, and no to those things that don't. So the first step is to stop shooting all over yourselves and start saying no. And then the second step is we got to look at our time. If we want to understand our own power, how are we thinking about time? So has anyone in here read the book? It came out a while ago, The Last Lecture by a guy named Randy Pausch. Okay. It's a great book. Randy Pausch was a professor at Carnegie Mellon. He was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in August of 2007. He gave a last lecture talking about his life and living life fully that went viral on YouTube, which then spawned a New York Times best-selling book, The Last Lecture. And when I saw Randy's video a few years ago, it really stuck with me around how he talks about time. So I've never heard time described this way. So I'm going to show you a short video clip of him, and listen carefully to how he talks about time.
and apparently mortgages too. So, but most people do at least understand. They don't look at you funny if you say, "Well, can I see your monetary budget for your household?" In fact, if I say your household budget, you presume that I'm talking about money, when in fact the household budget I'm really talking about is probably your household time budget. At the Entertainment Technology Center at Carnegie Mellon, students would come in, and during the orientation, I would say, "This is a master's program. Everybody's paying full tuition, and roughly $30,000 a year." And the first thing I would say is, "If you're going to come into my office and say, 'I don't think this is worth $60,000 a year,' I will throw you out of the office. I'm not even going to have that discussion." And of course, they would say, "Oh God, this Pausch guy's a real jerk." And they were right. But what I then followed on with was, because the money is not important, you can go and earn more money later. And what you'll never do is get the 2 years of your life back. So if you want to come into my office and talk about the money, I'll throw you out. But if you want to come into my office and say, "I'm not sure this is a good place for me to spend 2 years," I will talk to you all day and all night, because that means we're talking about the right thing, which is your time. Because you can't ever get it back.
What'd you hear him say? How did he describe time? Commodity is more important than everything. You can't get it back. So you can go and earn more money later, but you're never going to get this time back. You've got 168 hours in the week to be invested for the highest return. So he talks about it as a commodity. But what I've found is we don't necessarily think about it that way. So... hi, I'm coming to you. Hi.
Hi.
Good morning, Miriam. I'm Carson.
Nice to meet you.
So I was doing a little procrastinating last night. I got in late, and so I really like online shopping, and I found some fantastic boots, and they're going to be great for fall. They're going to look really, really good. I think they might actually be comfortable, but they're $10 more than I actually want to spend. So would you give me the $10 for the boots? They're going to be fantastic. Okay, well, she said sure with her voice. Her face said heck no, which we know I just cleaned up a lot. All right, let's see. Hi. Hi, I'm Carson.
Hi, Nora Lisa.
Nora Lisa, nice to meet you. What business are you in?
Case management with Workforce Solutions.
Okay. So I've got a couple of ideas how we can possibly streamline some of the processes that you're using to manage your caseload, and how we might start to be able to leverage some technology tools. But I'm still kind of brainstorming ideas. I'm not exactly sure what I really want to talk about, but can I get on your calendar for about an hour just to have a brainstorming session?
Sure, you want to meet after lunch?
Sure. Good job. So what just happened there? Ridiculous example about boots, right? I mean, that's incredibly ridiculous. And absolutely not. You're going to give me $10. However, very graciously, I just got 60 minutes of your time. And I didn't have a clear objective. And I certainly didn't have an agenda. So where are we giving away our time? You're not giving away your money. You're thoughtful. You're intentional. You're purposeful. We want the same thing for the hours in our day. And the great thing is, at any moment in time, you've got something I call an investment statement, which is your calendar, because it shows how you've chosen to invest your commodity. So if you looked at your calendar, what does it say? Is it in alignment with your goals, your priorities? Is there time for self-care in you? In that calendar, because we tend to put ourselves last. What does your investment statement say? So this is the paradigm shift around time, that we start to value time at least as much as our money, if not more, so that we can start to make investment decisions and align our time spend with our goals and objectives. Now, most of us as women, I'm making some generalizations here, but most of us as women are very good about saying yes and taking on more and more and more. And we take on more, but we never let go of all the other stuff. And then all of a sudden, we've got a really full calendar and really full life. So what do you need to stop doing? And I think this is a really hard question. At least for me, this is very, very difficult. So what do you need to stop doing so that your investment statement is in alignment with who you are and where you want to go in life? So for example, if you're still completing the same report you've been doing for the last year and no one reads it, why are we doing it? If you're still attending meetings and you have no idea why you're there, why are you going to the meeting? If you're still going to an exercise class you don't even like, why are you going? It's what do I need to stop doing? This is the personalization piece. This is where we look at and get really honest about what serves us. So I want to end this section by giving you a couple of tactics. I want to give you some, hopefully they'll be very easy to implement, I think they are, but some tactical ways that you can invest your time wisely. And so the first one to think about, and this is for the folks who are more analytical, linear, and fact-based thinkers. These are strategies that really will resonate with you. So the first one is to time yourself. So do you know how long it takes you to process 50 emails? Do you know how long it takes for you to get out the door in the morning? Do you know how long it takes you to complete that report or prepare a presentation? And if you're very analytical and data-oriented, you love this stuff. So I want you to know how long it takes you to complete something so then we can go faster. It becomes a little bit of a goal and a game. How can we shave 2 minutes off the morning routine? Can I put the oatmeal out the night before? Can I decide what I'm going to wear? Can I reduce the number of choices I have in my wardrobe so it's really easy? Can I start to streamline email processing? How do we make it faster? And then the second strategy for those of you who are these analytical, very linear thinkers is let's start looking at routines. I love routines. They're boring, but man, they're effective. Because what you do is you think once about what you want to do, you set the routine, and then you move on autopilot. So it takes less mental energy, which we definitely want to conserve, and you get faster and faster. And what's happening in our brains is something called long-term potentiation. It's just a fancy word for wiring in new neural networks and patterns. So you want a routine for filing emails, responding to emails, answering phone calls, getting dressed in the morning, ending your day. As many routines as we can establish, the faster you're going to get the work done with the least amount of effort. If you're more of an organized, detailed, planned thinker, so you've never met a planning tool you didn't like, you write stuff on your to-do list that's already done just to cross it off, these are the strategies for you. So for you, we want to make sure you're batching or grouping like tasks. So this means on your task list that you really like and you use really well, we're grouping all the phone calls you need to make together. We're grouping all the reading you need to do together. We're grouping all of the analysis you need to do together, all the writing. We want to do the same type of task so we reach that flow state. And then what happens is you're naturally faster. So think about if you have to make a couple of outbound phone calls. First phone call goes okay. Second phone call, a little bit better. By the fourth or fifth phone call, you're in the groove. That's what we're looking for with this batch processing. Now, if you are that organized, planned, detailed person, you're also great at calendar management, and you really live by your calendar. But an opportunity for you is to include buffer time. Because what I see with my clients who are this organized, detailed, the planner types, is they tend to pack their days pretty tightly. And when someone else is not on time, because you were typically on time, which means you're 5 minutes early, your whole entire day gets blown out of the water. So we want to be intentional about buffer time. And for my planners, these organized folks, buffer time doesn't feel like you're getting anything done. And you like to cross stuff off those lists. So part of it's reframing that buffer time is the space to think and reflect. And there's power in that. Now, if you are more of an intuitive, relational, kinesthetic thinker, and you do your best work with and through people, then these are your strategies. So the first one is to know your energy and respect your body. And this one has irritated me for years personally, because I really want to be able to power through. If I don't get a lot of sleep, I still want to feel perky and be able to focus. If I'm hungry, I still want to get my work done. If I'm grouchy, I still want to get my work done. Unfortunately, the reality is nature wins this battle every single day. So if you're pissed off, hungry, tired, guess what? We need to refuel, watch stupid videos on YouTube, and reset. And then re-engage. Because think about the last time you tried to power through. It took you twice as long. Versus if you just gave yourself a 5-minute reset and then came back to it, you're going to get it done. And this is also the awareness, that personal awareness around your own energy rhythms. Because we all have different rhythms in our day. Some of us are morning people. Some of us are night owls. Some of us really do our best work after, like, a great session with people. And some of us really do our best work after some solo reflection time. This is the embracing the personal power. Because productivity isn't a one-size-fits-all solution. I mean, have you ever tried on a one-size-fits-all t-shirt? It stinks. It doesn't fit anywhere. One-size-fits-all productivity solutions never work. This is where you're customizing based on what works for you. Because there isn't any right or wrong, by the way. There isn't any right or wrong, and there's no good or bad. It's what works for you. No apologies. This works for me. We have to own it. And the second strategy, if you are what I call the arranger type, that kinesthetic, emotional, intuitive, relational person, then we got to make sure you're getting refueled with people. So too much solo work is a productivity drain for you. So there's an intentionality around scheduling time to interact and connect with people. If you are more of my big picture, you're my risk taker, you're seeing possibilities, you've never met a whiteboard or post-it notes or colored markers you didn't like, and a deadline for you, ooh, you just skate right on into that. These are my adrenaline junkies. If that's how you think, then these are your strategies. So the first one is, I want you to think and act like a sprinter, not a marathoner. So these big picture, intuitive, synthesizing thinkers, I call them visualizers. They do some of their best work juggling a lot of different types of tasks. That's what gives them energy. We need you working in short bursts of time. 15, 20 minutes, and we're switching tasks. This 60 minutes, 90 minutes, which is really hard these days to get that much chunks of that long of a chunk of time, fundamentally doesn't work for you. You've got to move into this oscillation. And then the other one for you, did it come up? There we go. Is you get bored. My visualizers are the ones that get bored really, really quickly because they're the creative, innovative ones. They always have that next breakthrough idea. And so if it gets a little stale, they're going to start to stir the pot a little bit. So we've got to make sure you're interspersing the routine, boring work, we all have it, with stuff that engages you and is more interesting. So interestingly, I read an article, an interview with Martha Stewart talking about how she manages her day. And what she does is she stacks her day. The front end of the day is all what she characterizes as that routine, kind of boring work. And she saves everything she likes for the afternoon. So she can power through her morning because she's excited about what's going to happen in the afternoon. Time is a non-renewable resource. You're not ever going to get it back. What do you choose to do differently to align your time spent with your goals and what you want for your life? And how are you leveraging what you know to be true about you and the way you think and the way you work to maximize your time? Because you're a choice. And I hope you'll step in. So how many of you, if we pushed print on your inboxes, it would shut your machine down and start sending stuff at you, spewing messages. I mean, how many of you have exploding inboxes? How many of you have a love affair with your inbox? You just love email. No, I haven't met anyone yet that loves their inbox. So what are some of your biggest pet peeves when it comes to email and email management? Junk. Reply all.
Oh, no. Rod, you sent this email, reply all. You hit reply all. You know, I was wrong. You just sent this email to me. Could you imagine?
We were at a Super Bowl party 2 years ago when that ad came on, and I was the geek. I was like, oh my God, this is a fantastic ad. I ran to my friend's computer. I was like, how can I get this ad? I love it. I think it's really funny. But reply all, it's a huge pet peeve of ours. So here's my belief around our inboxes. I think that they can be the best personal assistant you have ever had. They can be. The problem is, we're not asking them to do anything for us. So I'm going to invite you to step into It's Time email tool. You're going to start working for me. And you're going to start making it easier for me to do my work. Because what I found with our clients is you've got a pretty robust technology platform here. Whether you're using Outlook or Gmail or Lotus Notes or Mac Mail, this technology is powerful. We're just not maxing it out. We're just not asking it to work harder for us. So we're going to look at how do you turn your inbox into the best personal assistant you've ever had. And the first step is to recognize that your inbox is nothing more than everyone else's agenda. Your inbox represents everyone else's to-do list, right? It's what everybody else wants from you. So the first thing that a personal assistant does really well is they kind of block the comings and goings, right? Who's going to come in, what we're going to do next. So the first thing I'm going to suggest is that you don't start your day with email. I know. Oh, my gosh. She just, wow. Like, talk about countercultural. What? Because the default for all of us, unfortunately, I'm seeing more and more of this, you roll over and you check it on your device. And then you get to the office, and the first thing you do is you log on. You look up, you're like, oh, 9:30, got to go. Conference call. Boom. The rest of your day. And so all you've done in that first part of the day is react to everybody else's to-dos. You've handled their to-do list. What if we start the day on your to-do list? So now what this might mean is that it could be just 5 minutes that you work on one of your tasks and then you open your inbox. Because this is where you're personalizing your productivity. I don't work for your companies. I don't sit in your seat. So this is something where you have to figure out what is right for you. But I would challenge you, even that 5 minutes of focused work on your task, your priority, it's going to shift the energy for the day because you've moved from a place of reacting to proactively responding, taking action. You're in more control. And so then when you jump in to the chaos of the inbox, you've gotten something done. So the next thing for us to look at is something called rules. And this is where we're going to start to leverage technology. So how many of you are familiar with the rules function in Outlook? And how many of you are familiar with the filters and categories in Gmail? This is what we're talking about. Now, what I love about rules is that this is the automation. This is where you're saving hours, and let me underscore this, hours each week by setting up rules. Because here's how they work. You look at your inbox. I'm getting a lot of material I need to read. I don't necessarily need to see it right then and there. So I'm going to write a rule. Every time I receive an email from this trade journal, this publication, this company update, I'm going to write a rule that automatically files that in my reading folder. And then I'm going to batch process and read. Or every time I get an email from a colleague about a certain project, I'm going to send an automated response, forward the email to the rest of the project team, and file that email without touching it. You set up a rule. Rules automate your decision making. So setting up a rule takes less than 15 seconds, and then Outlook performs the action. Gmail performs the action for you over and over again. This is one of the most powerful, underutilized features. And they're simple to set up, really simple to set up. The other thing is that what I want you to do is to think about setting a goal. And both of these strategies are really good for that prioritizer, that analytical, logical person, is to think about, okay, at the end of my workday, I'm going to have no more than 50 unprocessed emails. I'm not going to stop my day until 50 or less are unprocessed. And what this does for those folks who are very goal-oriented is we've upped the ante. You want to end your day, and so it speeds you up. It gives you focus. Rules automate, and setting a goal is going to focus you. Then the other thing I want you to think about is how can you start to leverage the task functionality in your inbox? Because what I found with emails is that we waste a lot of time rereading email messages. Email volume is growing at a rate of 66% per year, and the average worker spends 41% of their day managing email. I'm not sure that's the highest and best use of your time. And the reason that this is happening is because we're rereading email messages and not making a decision. So an email message comes in, and the message is from a challenging client. None of you have those. And you're like, not going to deal with you right now. Skip. Next message comes in. It's from a colleague, and they're asking you for this long, updated report. Skip. I'll get back to that. Third message comes in. Tomorrow night, cookout, my house. Absolutely. And I'm bringing the wine. You respond right away. But what about those two emails you did nothing with? They're clutter. And clutter is nothing more than postponed decisions. So now we've got to go back and redecide. So we want to short circuit. We want to hack for that loop. Because think about it this way. Let's say you get 100 email messages. Takes you a minute or so to read them. That's an hour and 40 minutes of your day. If you have to go back and reread those same 100 messages because we didn't decide and task it, well, now you're at over 3 hours of your time. Your time's a commodity. I'm not sure that's the highest and best use of it. So we want to take emails and move them to the task list. So what I'm showing you here is Outlook. You can do this in Gmail. You can do this in Lotus Notes. You can do this in Mac Mail. I'm just showing you Outlook. So then email comes in. You decide that it requires action by you. And we don't want to have to go back and reread that. Wasting of time. You right-click and drag in Outlook, and you get this dialog box. You can copy or move it. And then what happens when you select copy or move, it's now in the task manager and Outlook. So we have all of your tasks in one place, which helps. And you can leverage all the tools at your fingertips. This is where technology starts to help you. I can set a reminder. I can set a due date. I can categorize it, align it with a project if that helps me. I can even assign it from here. So the technology is really supporting me. If you don't want to use the task manager, the other thing you can do to convert this email to a task and stop that rereading loop that's sucking our time is you can change the subject line. You open the email message, highlight the subject line, you type in your next action step. Review fourth quarter projections. You click save and close, and now what you're doing in your inbox is you're creating a to-do list of very specific next action steps to avoid that rereading. Our planners, our organized folks will really love this. And one of the pet peeves around email is this sense of urgency. So let's make sure we have some respectful boundaries when it comes to email. All right, the other thing that I want you to think about with email is it takes a lot of our time when we get sloppy emails. And sloppy emails are the ones where the subject line is re, you're not sure what you're supposed to do, creates a lot of back and forth. So we want to make sure that you're eliminating that and you're starting to leverage your calendar. So here's how you might move emails to your calendar or why you would do it. So let's say, for example, you have a conference call coming up on Monday. You've accepted the meeting request, and then the organizer sends you an email that has additional information. Well, you can move that email to your calendar. You can do this in every platform that you're on. And what you would do is you'd move it so it's adjacent to that meeting. So now what I have is all the information I need to be successful in that meeting at my fingertips. It's on my calendar. Or I might move emails to my calendar if I have given myself and blocked time for work. So some of our planners, our organized folks do this. I've blocked time for work. I'll move my emails into that blocked time, creating a mini to-do list for myself. So in this 30-minute work block, I've got a to-do list, leveraging the technology to support us. Now on to sloppy emails. You've got to tell me what to do, because how many emails are you getting with these crazy subject lines? Right? Forward. You have no idea what they're about. Well, we want to reduce our time spent. So if you just change the subject line to tell me what to do, and this is simple. This is such a simple technique. But it really does change the volume of email you get, because I'm clear. Action required, what it is you need from me, and then a due date. And so if I'm the recipient, got it. I can respond accurately and on time. And, oh, by the way, if your colleague sorts their emails by subject line, the A in action required goes to the top. A little added bonus. Now, we also need to think about those colleagues who are very relational. They do their best work with and through people. And one of their defaults with email is they want to make sure everyone's included. So this is where the CC line starts to get a little full. So I'm going to suggest that we avoid something called CC overload. Because what you don't want is your colleague to write a rule automatically deleting your emails because you CC the whole world. So my bias on email is that the to line is reserved for the person who owns the action. So I'm accountable for taking action on that email, or I've got the authority to make a decision on it. And the CC line is just for folks who need to know, right? But it's folks who really just need to know. It's not every stakeholder known to man. Now, our colleagues who are very relational, enjoy working with and through folks, we want to make sure we're giving them the maximum time for that and leveraging the technology. Because remember, we're turning this inbox into your best personal assistant. So this is where the use of templates comes into play. And a template is nothing more than an email you write once and you save and you use over and over again. 30 minutes to write it, hours on the back end. So what I would suggest that you do is you look at your inbox and look at the types of responses, the standard responses you're sending out. Craft that email once, you save it, and then we use it over and over again. This is a killer example of a routine. It works every time. So let's say, for example, you're in HR, and you frequently are looking for candidates. So you have job postings and you receive resumes. I'd write a template. Thank you for submitting your resume. Outline the next steps, your signature, save it, and then all you have to do is personalize it with the name when you get the next resume versus typing it every time. And then the last thing, I think I have one more over here. Yep, is I want you to make email time fun. So it feels like a drag for most of us, particularly if you're that relational person. Email feels impersonal. So one of our clients, Melinda, she manages the global executive coaching practice for a manufacturing firm. And she is an off the charts, what we call a Rangers, the relational kinesthetic thinker. And so for her, email was a drag. She'd much rather Skype with you. She'd much rather talk to you on the phone, or best case, we're in person. So email became a very low priority for her. Unfortunately, we all know we have to manage our inboxes, and that's when I get the call. And quickly realized that what we needed to do was reframe Melinda's relationship with email and help her understand that it is a really great tool to connect, and we can use it that way. But also, how can she have fun with it? So Melinda loves two things, great music and really good chocolate. So now when she's processing emails, she rocks out. She turns on her favorite music. And then she's given herself a goal. So every 200-ish to 300 emails she processes, she gets a tiny piece of chocolate. And the way she maintains this is she went out and found, I think, the most expensive chocolate in the world. So it's just a tiny little piece of chocolate. All right, last but not least, two more strategies for you. So if you're highly visual, we do not want you to waste a lot of time trying to figure out what message to respond to first, right? You open your inbox, there are 100 messages, what do I need to do first? Well, what we can do is we can use color. So we can color code incoming messages based on sender and priority. So we can color code all your messages from your boss in red. So when you open your inbox, I'm going red first. We can color code all of your top customers or clients in green, going green first or second. We can also color code emails based on where your name appears. So all the emails that you're CC'd on, we can gray those out so that you can just focus on the ones where your name's in the to line. And then the last one is we've got to turn it off. We have to turn off that email notification alarm. So that's the little pop-up. You know, you get a new message, ding. And I don't know about you, but it pops up and I look at it, I'm like, ooh, it's got to be better than what I'm working on. Oh, I am checking it out. How can I not? I can't not check it out. But the problem is it pulls me away. I now go check the email, go down that rabbit trail, and then try to come back. There was a really interesting study in the Journal of Neuroimaging. It's a really exciting publication. And it does sound like it, doesn't it? And what they looked at is this concept of task switching. Working on task A, interrupted, boom, go to task B. And what they found over the course of the week in this task switching, the study participants lost 8 hours. I don't know about you, but I didn't get 8 hours of sleep last night. Turn it off. And this is a simple one. This will take you maybe 5 seconds. 5 seconds to potentially save hours of time. I'm all in. Your inbox works for you. It's time to start asking it to do more. It can. We just have to ask it. So here's the overall hack for you. So you are sitting in there in your desk, you're looking at your inbox. I wonder if my email can send automated responses for these 5 different types of emails and alert me when I receive emails from this person. One, yes, it can. Then you're gonna go, well, how am I gonna do that? YouTube. You're gonna go to YouTube, you're gonna type in, how do I write a rule in Outlook? And you're going to get the best instructional videos for free, 10 minutes later, you've learned, you've set it up, and you are flying. Time is a commodity. You're not ever going to get it back. And so you're in a place of choice to choose to do something differently. And I love this last little piece on email. I think this is what's happened to us. And this is why we're clearly checking email in the bathroom, right? So obviously, I'm all about how can we streamline your work and how can you work smarter, not harder, and how can you embrace your personal productivity style and really create systems that work for you. But I believe there's a bigger why at stake here. It's not just about being more efficient. So it was December 26th, the day after Christmas, and I was sitting in our den, and I was wrestling with some Christmas lights because, of course, one bulb wasn't working, and the whole strand was a mess. And as I sat there, I realized I wasn't going to be able to stand back up. I was physically exhausted. I was emotionally exhausted. Even my soul was tired. 10 days before, we had celebrated my daughter's first birthday, and we'd celebrated with a cake the size of a castle. Classic working mother's guilt, decided. And what I realized in that moment was I'd made some really poor choices. 6 weeks after her birth, I got on an airplane, flew to Arizona, and spent a week working with clients. I did that for the entire first year of her life. I was fueled by my ego. If I don't go out and build the business and serve the clients, oh, and by the way, prove that I'm valued, I'm needed, and I can help people, what'll happen? I was also driven by this script, this superwoman script, the woman who has to perform at the highest levels in her career and be on every volunteer committee, be the Mary Poppins mom, and shave occasionally. Competing, and to make matters worse, driven by my ego and this script, the name of my company is called Working Simply. Yep. And so here I was, a basket case, trying to tell people work simply. It wasn't working. And so I was reminded of the quote by Socrates, beware the busyness, beware the barrenness of a busy life. My life was pretty bare. And so in that moment, sitting on the floor, I took a hard look and realized that I was going to have to step into choice and make some different choices for myself and my life. Because I wasn't getting that first year of my daughter's life back. So what do you choose to do differently? How are you going to make the time you've just invested so graciously with me valuable? See, work is infinite. Fairly confident there will be dirty laundry the day I die. Fairly confident. However, life is finite. So I think today is your day. The day that you work simply and live fully. I appreciate your time. And if you want to, think about how are you going to use this? What are you going to do differently? I invite you to step into that place of choice. You've got cards on your chairs talking about a program that we're offering for you as women called Work Smarter, Not Harder. Videos, online support, it's all available to you for you to make the changes. Also, I'll be signing books at the book signing. And if you choose to buy a book, we've got a couple of special gifts, a holiday survival guide, as well as an MP4. So now I'm going to open it up to questions. What questions do you guys have? Questions? Any questions? Okay, thank you for your time. I'll see you afterwards. If you have questions, come up. Have a great day.